It's 12 Enough, Season 10, Episode 12, with your host Jonathan Malone and guest host David Van Brinkel. 12 Enough is a podcast about Christian faith and culture in the modern age. Your host, Jonathan Malone, is the pastor of the First Baptist Church of East Greenwich, Rhode Island. David Van Brinkel is the lead pastor of the Community Church of Willamette, Illinois. This podcast is brought to you by magnets. They say it's science, but I say it's witchcraft. And we're back. We're going to hear now the deep conversation I had with David Van Brinkel. As I say in the intro, David had the bad luck of writing a good blog post, and I read it and said, get on my show, David, and you can't refuse when I ask. I have that kind of power, that kind of presence, I guess, amongst American Baptists, for whatever that's worth. So David read some great Bonhoeffer and had some good reflections on it, and we talked about what is community, what does it mean to be in a community, how do you be deliberate in your community. It was a really good conversation. David's a nice guy. You know what? He's a great guy. And I hope you enjoy this deep conversation I had with David Van Brinkel. So David made the mistake of not only writing a very insightful and very thoughtful post, but sharing it with others. Because what happens when you do that is then it's inviting people to respond. And David, you wrote this great post, and this is on your blog. And what's your blog?
Oh, you can visit my blog. It's just davidvanbrakel.com.
Dave, and that's V-A-N-B-R-A-K-L-E-E-L?
That's right.
L-E.
V-A-N-B-R-A-K-L-E.
L-E, yep. .com. Go check it out. There is a lot of good stuff on there, and you wrote this post about being community, and you were responding in part to Dietrich Bonhoeffer's great book. I'm holding it up so David sees it.
Oh, nice. Yeah, Life right. Together.
Yeah, Life
great,
Together.
Great book. I thought this was going to be the one on dressing in parachute pants, dressing for success, but that's okay. We can talk about Bonhoeffer too. That's good.
Well, I anticipate the two dovetailing together.
Yeah. Oh, and they fit so perfectly together.
When I think Bonhoeffer, I think just a couple of things. I think, you know, Costly Grace. I think of his ethics. Mm-hmm. And I think MC Hammer can't touch this.
You know, people don't really make those connections. So I'm so grateful for you, Jonathan.
Yeah, that, well, it's not as well known that MC Hammer was influenced by reading Act and Being. that's what led him to write Can't Touch This.
But you can hear it in the lyrics now.
You can totally hear it in the lyrics. That's a deep Bonhoeffer cut right there.
That's right.
It was Act and Being. No, so Life Together. For those who don't know who Dietrich Bonhoeffer was, he's one of our great 20th century martyrs. He died in what year was it that he died? 48, 45? Do you remember? In the 40s.
In the 40s.
Yeah. He died in the 40s. Yeah, this is, we really prepared for this.
Was it
45? I just looked it up. Yeah, he was 45. Born from 1906 to 1945. He was a Lutheran pastor in Germany. During the rise of the Third Reich, he was part of the Confessing Church, which was the church that went against the government, which went against the state church. He came to New York for a while and then said he needed to be with his people and went back to Germany, was part of some conspiracy, to help some Jews escape from the country. He was very tangentially connected with a plot to try to assassinate Hitler. And which failed, And because of all this stuff and his outspokenness, he was eventually arrested, put in prison. His letters from prison are amazing, and then executed, hung. You know, and you know, people, I encourage you to read just almost anything by him. He is an incredible thinker. His ethics were very forward-thinking. He never got to really finish them. His two dissertations, Acton being a little heavy, but what's the second one called? You mentioned it in your writing.
Living Together?
No, Living Together is not his second dissertation. The Communion of the Saints.
Oh, the Sanctorum Communum? Or
Sanctorum Communum, that's it. Thank you. So Acton being is a little dense. Sanctorum Communum is his second dissertation, which he had to write in Germany to be able to teach. That one is a beautiful, beautiful writing that has a lot of good stuff in it. So, folks, this is all just a kind of a primer introduction on Bonhoeffer so people can have a sense of where we're coming from.
It's almost, I don't know, correct me if you think differently. I almost feel like Sanctorum Communum is almost his the theory behind community for him, whereas Life Together is almost like the practical guidebook.
Yeah, definitely. I would because the thing that Bonhoeffer was doing, we're gonna get a little bit geeky with our theology here. You know, Bonhoeffer was strongly influenced by Karl Barth, right?
Mm-hmm.
And Barth, one of Barth's places, like the source of theology for Barth was the word proclaimed. And I know all you Barthians are saying there's much more to it than that. He wrote all these dogmatics. How dare you just bring it down to one sentence? Hey, it's my show, so back off.
You got to be careful with the Barthian theologians, though. They're dangerous.
They are dangerous. I mean, have you ever had one of the volumes of the dogmatics thrown at you?
Those are heavy.
They are heavy. They hurt. I have a limp now. That's what happens when you... But it's always fun, just as an aside, it's always fun to get some Tillichians and some Barthians in a room and just get them fighting and then walk away. That's what I call sport right there.
That's sport right there.
That's true sport. So the thing that Bonhoeffer was doing that helped him diverge from Barth was Bonhoeffer said the source of the revelation of our faith, of our theology, is not so much from the word proclaimed, but it's the way in which it's received and shared through the community.
Mm.
That's what Sanctorum Communum was really getting at, that it's from the saints themselves that we understand our faith.
Mm.
Which some may say is a nuanced difference, but yeah, I think you're totally right, that feeds his book Life Together, comes out of that theology. I've talked enough right now. David, can you give us a little bit of sense of what Life Together is, or what led you to, well, tell us what it is and then what led you to read it?
Yeah, so like I said, I think Life Together is really that practical book of how do we live out this Christian community, right?
And yeah.
And I mean, I think that's the thing for me that is so powerful about Bonhoeffer, is that it really is a concrete view of how we're supposed to live out this faith, right? You know, we talk right. about Christ existing within community. For Bonhoeffer, that is the church, right? It's that Christ is there with us in community, and how do we live that out? For me, I don't know what I think. Maybe it's the political season we're in that I picked up my Bonhoeffer again.
Mm-hmm.
Maybe it's because as a church, we've been talking about what does the future of our congregation look like, and what does it mean to, you know, what's our identity as a congregation right now? Maybe it's my own frustrations of just trying to rework my own theology. I think on one hand, I grew up in kind of a evangelical, moderate to evangelical setting. Went to Eastern University.
A fine institution of higher learning.
Fine institution of higher learning. I don't know if I completely appreciated Eastern at the time.
Hmm.
But I had the theology department, the professors I had were so diverse.
Oh, nice.
That it really kind of stretched me in different ways. And And I wound up reading Rauschenbusch when I was there, and so I felt like I was going to be a classic liberal Christian. Went off to Colgate Rochester. Found myself, you know, struggling with the fact that, you know, sometimes even Christian liberalism feels like it's just it's exhausting, right?
It's exhausting to have to care about other people all the time.
It's so exhausting to have to care about other people. So I gave that up for a while.
I'd rather just, why can't they just love Jesus?
Why can't they just love Jesus? It makes so much more sense.
Stupid liberals. Sorry, go ahead.
No, for me it was, I don't know. There's so many positive things about the church. That when church is working well, I have now in my life felt like I've been in a variety of different church settings, from storefronts to multicultural churches to now on the North Shore, right? My Lily White suburban church here in Chicago. I feel like we can do so much good when we're, you know, kind of functioning in healthy ways and caring about others and caring about Christ. And for me it was, but then on the other hand, you know, we can be so inward focused in other times too. And I think that's what, for me, that's really what Bonhoeffer, I was reading through Life Together again, and I knew Bonhoeffer called us out on that, but then this idea that, like, I was reading through Life Together and Bonhoeffer's talking about how God hates the dreamer, how God hates the person who is dreaming for community. How if we are dreaming for community and how we wind up kind of developing our own ideals for community. No matter how sacrificial, how well-intentioned we are, and then how he kind of calls us to focus on Christ, of course, which always seems so superficial to me, but you know, reading through Bonhoeffer again, it struck me in a different way. When we love other people around us in community, it's not because we are loving them because we get along with them, right? But because we're seeing Christ in them, and how that even aspires to people that, you know, I've been in church life long enough where there are some unlovable people sometimes in church that I've heard about from my friends.
Never the churches you've served.
Never the churches I've served.
You said the idea of focusing on Christ felt superficial to you at first. Can you say a little more about that? Like I think I know what you mean by that, but do you mind unpacking that a little bit?
Sure. Going back to even my college days, I think it's so easy for us. Actually, no, I won't even go back to my college days. I think in my life in general, and I think even now, it's so easy to get up and behind the pulpit and say, we are called. People will know that we are Christians by our love. We are called by Christ to love others.
Right.
I think the radicalness of that is sort of lost because that's become so trite. It's become maybe for me. It's become so part of my everyday vocabulary.
Right. It's almost too easy to say.
Yeah, that's right. That's right. But the idea that I'm called to love everybody, and that means I've got to open the table and invite those who are quite unlovable at times to sit down with me. And, you know, I read stories of Jesus hanging out with the sinners, and, you know, it's not, you know, that seems great. I mean, those are the fun people maybe to hang out with, but
yeah, they are.
But he sits down with the Pharisees and shares, you know, breaks bread. And, I think, It's a hard call to truly be open, right? To loving and caring.
So I wonder how much of the I relate to your reaction. I'm not putting you on the spot to call you
Oh,
out.
please do.
Well, I mean that. So that first reaction of like, boy, yeah, just focus more on Christ. Like, yeah, I've heard that before. But I wonder how much of that is almost a defensiveness, because we know that if we actually do focus on Christ closely and carefully, it's hard, is what I hear you saying. That it's challenging and it could be scary, and we'd rather stay with the trite, or mock the trite,
or mock the trite, right?
Right. Yeah, so I mean, we can say, yeah, stay with Christ. Yeah, I hear that just as much as I enjoy watching, it's just as much as I see a Thomas Kincaid painting. It's this real basic, easy spirituality. I just got to see Jesus in everyone and we're all good. But then, yeah, I hear what you're saying. We're like, wait a second, what if we really look at who Christ was and what he is doing? Yeah, that's hard. And so you saw, so Bonhoeffer calls us. Is that the centering part of the idea of community for him?
Yeah, that's at least for me, right? That's how I'm reading into it.
That's good enough.
And since you don't have anyone to debate on the show with me today, right. that's what I'll go with.
Yeah. yeah, I couldn't get any other Bonhoeffer scholars. I couldn't get any other Bonhoeffer scholars on. So you're going to speak for all people who have.
Oh, great!
Yeah.
Great. No, I mean, even in living together, what's the quote that stood out so much to me was, I think something along the lines of, Christianity means community through Jesus Christ and in Jesus Christ. And my gosh, I mean, to actually live into that is that's a high calling. I mean,
Now, in your blog post, what I really enjoyed about it is that you use life together as kind of a, or it seemed to me that you used it as kind of a leaping off point, where you said, I read this book, Life Together, about being community, and then I started thinking about the community of church that we have in our American 21st century Western culture,
right?
Which was more inward, and you quoted Gruder, I think, and he's one.
David Gruder. Yeah.
Is he one of the missional church guys?
He is.
That's
he
okay. Is. We'll still read him.
I think I read him. I read him on the back of my Ranger Rick magazine once.
Well, you got to start somewhere. Gosh darn
it! You got to start somewhere, right?
And maybe he'll get there someday.
Maybe he will.
Maybe he'll get as far as the Christian century.
That's right. Maybe someday. One could only hope, right?
One could only hope. I don't think he's ready for 12 enough, but Christian century might be all right.
Christian century is a good stepping stone.
It's a liberal rag, and we both know it.
We know it. I get it for the pictures.
I get it for the really cleverly written advertisements.
They're genius. It's a
and for me,
But Gruder was all about. The thing that I liked about the article that I came across from Gruder was he was talking about kind of this end of Christendom, but when he was talking about Christendom, he was showing that like the conservatives, the progressives, I mean, we all kind of fall into the same model, and that's it's kind of this mindset of like this religious consumerism. As things start to degrade and start to fall apart, it's so tempting to kind of circle the wagons and preserve what we know, or even if we're like in churches I've been in too. I've been in churches where people are willing to make sacrifices with this idea of reaching new people, but even their intentions of doing that is to do that in a way that is still continuing the way they know church.
So reaching the people they want to reach.
Right.
Yeah. Yeah,
or still a form of church that we are familiar with.
Right, right. Yeah, and that. So the life together in Bonhoeffer's book, really, you see that as a challenge to the way we're doing church now, which is more insulated, more consumerly focused, more preservation.
Is that right?
So,
no, and Bonhoeffer too. I think Bonhoeffer looked at Christianity and So it became about the Nazis, but I think at first he was looking at what, labor rights or in Germany, and how the church was unable to really speak up about that.
He wrote his great part about Costly Grace. I believe he wrote that while he was serving a church in England, a fairly middle class church, and just saw people living well and not struggling.
Right.
You know, so yeah, speaking out to that too. So that idea of really struggling, or speaking to the comforts of church life today, and calling people out. Do you get the sense when in reading Life Together, do you get the sense that it was that it's almost too idealistic, or do you think there's a practical realism that can be found in it?
So I think maybe it's where I'm at now. Maybe it's because of where we've been politically. Maybe it's been, you know, working with different churches. I think when I first read Life Together in college, I kind of blew it off. I think then I would have said it was too idealistic, but there really is. And I think one, I'm not sure it's so bad. I don't think it's a bad thing if the bar is raised a little bit higher than what perhaps we're able to achieve. Jesus does that in the Beatitudes.
Come on. Why can't he say just blessed are those who try real hard?
That's right. You know, blessed are those who almost get it.
Yeah. Come on. Blessed are the kind of meek and the mostly peaceful.
But I think there really is a practicalness to Life Together. As I read through it this time, that, you know, it's just, especially, I mean, he goes through like these different ministries in Life Together of how there's a ministry of listening and a ministry of helpfulness and a ministry of bearing one another's burdens and proclaiming this ability to speak for one another and this ministry of authority. He has a whole list of practical things that we can do as a community. I think maybe it's a little too perfect for us to achieve, but it's certainly a trajectory that we can aim for,
right,
as a congregation, right, as a community of faith.
So one of the things I struggle with though is that, you know, these ministries are very insulated or insular focused. Like, how do we, listening to each other, caring for each other. How is that different from the consumerism that you're trying to react against?
Well, I guess it goes back to that whole focus, right? If that whole focus is on Christ instead of just one another, right? I'm caring for those who are around me because, you know, that's Christ that I'm caring for, and, you know, it's I think.
So there's a real incarnational aspect to it.
I think for Bonhoeffer, the community, this Christian community that he is trying to build is the incarnational Christ, right, for him in many ways.
Right, right. What really pushes me with that is it goes against the missional idea of saying we've got to be out there in the community, not directly, but to a degree, saying it's about how we care for each other within our community. It certainly goes against an evangelicalism that says we got to be spreading the word. It's almost monastic.
Well, and I wonder though, so I don't know enough about missional church. But I wonder if with Bonhoeffer, we're existing for something other than ourselves, and how we take that back into the world. I think that in a way is missional, right? I mean, it's not.
Yeah, I think so. I mean, I think the missional movement, from what I understand, is really focused on getting out there in the community, finding a place where you can plug in and can serve, and being the church in the community.
Ooh. Ooh, that's not good for my introverted self.
Right, I know, right? That's terrifying. Well, the pastor is supposed to stay back and just coordinate.
Oh,
encourage.
Good.
Yeah, don't worry, you're good. You're safe. But I think, I don't remember if Bonhoeffer wrote this before or after he helped create his seminary or during. Mm. And for the listeners that don't know that, you know, the church that he was serving, the confessing church, was just the government shut it down more and more. And they just had one seminary, and they all lived on campus, and he lived with these students. And I think that was part of the impetus for him writing this Life Together, was they really strove to have almost a monastic lifestyle in this culture of real oppression, of being closed down more and more by the government, and saying, so how can we take care of each other? How can we help each other? I think that was part of the context that this came out of. Does that make sense? Do you remember that at all? Or
well, I thought that's what he was. I thought that's where Life Together came from.
Yeah, that's what I thought so too. But if we both feel that, then it's probably true.
Then it must be true.
It's got to be
true. And if not, it's your show.
That's right. Yeah. So back off, Bonhoeffer scholars.
Exactly. Well, and I wonder too, like with so you've got Kant, who looks at the IU relationship, and but with Kant, it's always.
This is Immanuel Kant you're talking about, right?
Immanuel Kant.
Okay,
right?
Fred Kant, because he's a totally different guy.
No. Not George Kant, who's handing out ice cream cones on the
Go ahead. So yeah, Immanuel Kant is talking about I mean
that whole IU, right? It's this whole idea that I view you, right, as a reflection of myself. Isn't this correct?
Yeah, I think so.
And with Bonhoeffer, it's this whole idea, I mean, because he writes extensively. I mean, he responds to that as well. He responds to Kant. And,
yeah.
And his whole idea is that it's really by interacting with you, I'm being shaped, right? That becomes the ethical, like it's not, for Bonhoeffer, I mean, that's what I love about Bonhoeffer is there's some theory, right? But it's not theoretical. It's concrete. I mean, we're being shaped by what we do.
So I wonder then, there is a real countercultural aspect to what Bonhoeffer is talking about, the in Life Together. Mm-hmm. You know, almost saying like we need to create, this is me reading into it a little bit, but I think to say we need to create a community where we can be shaped by Christ and where we can see Christ in others. And in seeing Christ in others, we were being shaped by the way we see Christ and react to Christ and shaped by Christ. That all make sense? Yeah.
Yeah.
And you know, and when you took the turn in your blog post, in your essay about, you know, looking at our church in society today, you didn't make explicitly how we need to be countercultural, but that's where I saw the next step. Yours was a very nice, it was a really well-written blog post with footnotes, which is great. So people,
you know,
go read it.
People from my church may see that, so I don't want to scare them by giving them.
Yes, I got that. That's what I figured. But what I read as the next step would be a countercultural movement of a church community.
Yeah, I mean, and we're seeing that right now, right? I mean, here in Chicago, we have different forms of church that are popping up. So even here, we've actually started a dinner church that meets twice a month.
Do you sing songs? Is it like a cabaret dinner, but more with church songs?
I dance.
Nice. Well, with the hammer pants, how do you not dance?
No, really, it's still taking shape, and it's been a fun experiment, I guess.
Yeah.
It really is. But it has some ritual. Mm-hmm. We share a meal.
Mm-hmm.
We have some intentional conversation around a reflection. But it's brought in people from the wider community. It's kind of becoming its own little community.
Excellent.
But is that, and I think this is the question we have on staff as we've been thinking through what next steps this might be, is that a worshipful experience? Is that a worship experience? Is that church? It's so different from what we've really kind of grown up with. Anyway, so it's not.
Let me ask you this. This is, I mean, one real way to find out if it's actual worship or not. Do you have an offering?
We do allow people to give us money.
All right, then it's church. It's good enough.
It's church. It's a.
If there is a time for people to divorce themselves from the shackles of money.
From the shackles of money, that's
then,
right.
Then it's to liberate themselves.
That's the teaching of Christ right there.
It's in one of the Gospels, I'm sure.
Oh, it is. It's right before Jesus says, fake it till you make it, I believe.
Oh, that's right. Yeah, Jesus did say that, right?
That's right.
So, but in this dinner church that you're doing, are you seeing a certain kind of community emerging?
We are. It's starting to take shape. And we've noticed that people will come from the wider community who don't show up on Sunday morning worship.
Is there a deliberateness in the way the community is being shaped? Are you trying to make sure there's a Christocentric nature to it, or are you allowing it to be a little freer, or how is that happening?
Yeah, so actually it started off as we were getting newer people in the mm-hmm. church, some families, and they were showing up about once every 6 weeks.
Yeah.
They were never showing up together, of course.
Right.
So you would tell them about these other families that they should meet. Nobody believes you that they exist, right?
Right.
So I wanted to start a monthly worship service just to get them all together and maybe do something with contemporary music. And when I sat down with the families and talked to them, none of them were interested in that. They said they just wanted to show up to church for fellowship and something for their kids. And so we started dinners just once a month. And they would come to that. And we noticed that as we started having more conversations, they were actually interested in their faith. So when we when we started these dinners twice a month, we were intentional about wanting to make it. We wanted to give it more of a shape. So it's still pretty informal.
Yeah.
I mean, right now, I would say it's pretty Christ-centered. I mean, you know, Christian-centric. Not everyone in the group would identify as being a Christian, so that's, you know, that's okay too. We now, this fall is the second year we're going into this, and mm-hmm. Each time we've done it, we have started with the act of communion as kind of setting the space.
Oh wow, nice.
So it's not. It really does have its own kind of worshipful feel to it, I think.
Right.
Which is really interesting.
So you have this example. So you have this experiment happening with your church, where you're seeing a different kind of community that growing,
right,
and being shaped and formed that is still somewhat connected to the church community itself.
Yeah, I think so. Each congregation has their own challenges.
Right.
I think that the congregation that I'm at right now, one of the challenges is, I think for the core group of people, just like me, I mean, we have one idea of church.
Right.
But I would say that probably for the most part, people in our congregation, the things that they find meaningful, the places where they find growth in their own lives, probably not necessarily just Sunday morning worship. So there might be aspects of it, but it's not necessarily the traditional church parts or the Christendom church parts.
Nice. Yeah, that's a good way to put it.
Yeah, they enjoy, communion. Each month that we do communion, they gather around in the circle up front, which is new to me, but they do it because it's something that they did informally when they were on a camping trip one time together.
Okay. Nice.
It's kind of these things that draw them back. So I think it's, you know, kind of breaking some of those molds and mm-hmm. seeing, okay, that's okay if we break some of these molds.
Right.
We can still fall on something that's meaningful. And I think for our congregation too, there are a lot of people who've been burnt by church. So I think showing that some of these traditions can be reclaimed, but seen differently, I mean,
right,
can still be meaningful, right? It's not, we don't just have to push against this. This is, we can readopt some of this as well.
Right. Right. No, that makes a lot of sense. And yeah. It sounds like you're still using Christ as kind of the litmus or the focal point of the of an emerging in the ways that the people in the community can experience or see Christ. You're not forcing it on them.
Right. Right. Oh, I would say I'm not sure my entire pastoral career I would have been as Christ-centric.
Mm-hmm.
But I think especially being here.
Well, I mean, there was that stint for a while when you were a Unitarian Universalist. That was an interesting time.
No, I was the guy who was sacrificing pigs.
You were the pig guy.
Yeah, I was the pig guy.
That was you. Oh.
You know, you gotta.
I just want to tell you, the tight leather pants and the pyrotechnics at the end, it was amazing. As much as I abhorred your theology, it was a great show.
Yeah, the Iron Maiden tracks were amazing.
Amazing. How could you not have them? Anyway, sorry. But you were getting at a serious point on people.
Well, I think it's the thing that I've started to realize here more and more is I think it's really the stuff that I have found that has turned me off to church has been a lot of the stuff that's centered around Christendom.
Hmm.
That when I really look at some of the stuff, I think it's okay to have an identity in Christ and understand that there are people of other faiths, right? That can be respected. But this is my tradition that I'm coming from. So I can pull from that as well. Bonhoeffer has really helped me. And I think you asked earlier why I came back to Bonhoeffer. I think in a lot of ways that's probably why right there. It's been helpful to think through that.
Yeah, I think before we started recording, I said something like Bonhoeffer will shake the liberal out of you.
Mm-hmm.
I think, yeah, he is so sincere in where he's coming from that he calls you to be sincere in your faith.
Mm-hmm.
And that's how I understood him. To kind of shake the liberal out of me, to say like, well, you know, you could go this way or that way, and I don't think he's saying everyone has to have the same faith, but he says, but you better be clear about yours.
Yeah,
you know,
that's such a good point. I've been thinking a lot about people who really impacted my faith over the years,
mm-hmm.
and there are people who are conservative, who are progressive, who are liberal, who mm-hmm. are evangelical, and it's really. Across the board, I think it's been the people who've been really just genuine about their faith and how that's shaped their lives. And there are people all across the camp who impacted me negatively too, right? But I think, that's sincerity. That's such a important thing to strive for. And how do we do it as a community?
Right.
That's the question.
Here's the problem, David, with what you're suggesting and what you're doing. Here's the real problem. Bonhoeffer doesn't offer four or five easy steps to becoming a church community. And life together is a watered down version of the community of the saints.
Right. The dissertation.
It still is full of footnotes. It's a tough. It's a long read. And are you really asking people to?
Living together really is like the community Christian community for dummies book.
It really is. And it's not an easy read.
It's not an easy read.
What would you tell someone that comes to you and says, David, I read your blog post. I feel like Bonhoeffer might have something, but boy, it seems really hard. What should I do?
Well, I want to point out.
Sell it. That, sell Bonhoeffer, I guess. That's what I'm asking. But go ahead.
I do want to point out that we're talking about making something easy from the person who says, what is it when Christ calls someone, Christ calls them to come and die? Isn't that?
Something. Someone said that, I'm sure.
Isn't that what Bonhoeffer says?
Probably. Yeah.
selling Bonhoeffer. I think it is a very difficult. It's a difficult book to kind of get through.
Yeah.
It's a difficult book for a lot of reasons. I mean, from my liberal side, it's a difficult book because there's a lot of masculinity.
Right.
Like terminology, right? It's not inclusive language. For my for myself that's been burnt by the church, it's a lot of Christ-centered language. But I think, you know, I think reading through it this last time, going through the Communion of the Saints, which is also, my gosh, that's not easy.
No, that's either. Not an easy book.
That's,
and it's easier than Act and Being. Act and Being is really, really tough.
Oh, yeah. You know, I started that.
and then you you came to your senses and said, what?
Oh, my gosh, there's got to be crib notes somewhere for that.
No, no one even has bothered to write the crib notes. You're like, no, no one needs to. No, just no.
Yeah, well, yeah, when the crib notes are just as convoluted.
And, yeah.
you know, I think so. The thing that struck me differently this time, which really kind of shed all of that, was it's difficult. It calls us to a much higher level of being church and being in community than perhaps Christendom. But yeah. The truth is, I mean, look at the last decade. I mean, the way we're doing church is not really working, right?
Yeah.
We have enough church help books. We have enough how-to books out there. You know, how to grow your and there is so much stuff out there, and all the stuff on church growth that I've read, some is great, some is great. It has a lot to do with what we're willing to do as a community. It places a lot of responsibility on us, right?
Right.
Whereas Bonhoeffer for me says, you know, really, the focus, if it's on Christ and building Christian community, that metric for success can look different depending on which community you're in.
Right.
And you know what? If we are building a community that we think is going to mark success and we fail, we're going to feel like failures. But if we are working towards a Christ-centered community, then that can look a million and one different ways and still be successful. It's not on us, right? It's
nice.
It's on this Christ that we're trying to live into.
That's great. Well, I think that's a great place to stop, to end it right there. I think I would encourage people to read Life Together. It is a slower read. He's not doing any hand holding. But I think it's also a slower read because there's some really challenging stuff in there to make you think, why am I not doing this? Just in my own personal faith, in my own life. Mm-hmm. Why am I not being like this? And also, I'll post a link to David's blog, to his essay. Definitely go and read that. It won't give you the summary of Life Together. It just continues the thought process and the conversation. Mm-hmm. But good conversation.
Yeah. And always interested in what people think, too.
Yeah, send comments and stuff.
Yeah, and I'd love to know what people are doing. If people do have different ways of doing church right now, that's always interesting too.
Excellent. Well, there it was, the deep conversation I had with David Van Brakel about community and Bonhoeffer and prayer and all that stuff. I do encourage you to go and read Life Together. It's a great book. It really just has some great stuff in it. So go read that book. Do yourself a favor. If you want to send a comment about this show or any other shows, I encourage you to, this is the second time I've encouraged you. This is, you could say it's a very encouraging podcast. Isn't that nice? Anyways, go to Gmail. Go to Gmail. Go down the street to the Gmail building and talk to the people, the management there in the complaint department. Or send an email to 12enough@gmail.com. That's all written out. If you like to see more about this show or other shows, go to 12enough.com where you can find the show notes. We talk about other shows. My blog is there. All that fun stuff is there, 12enough.com. So go check that out. Always promises just a rip-roaring good time. Rip-roaring good time. And go to the Facebook page, Facebook.com/12enough. You can follow me on Twitter @PastorMalone. And I think that's, so follow me on Twitter at Pastor Malone. And I also want to say a thank you for the music. It's by Andrew Malone. And you can find more of his wonderful ukulele breakbeats at andrewmalone.com. And as always, thank you very much for listening. 12 and Up is a podcast about Christian faith and culture in the modern age. Your hosts were Jonathan Malone, the pastor of the First Baptist Church of East Greenwich, Rhode Island, and David Van Brankle, the lead pastor of the Community Church in Willamette, Illinois. The thoughts, ideas, opinions, ruminations, prayers, moments of snoring, moments of being awake, and all other moments here on this show do not represent their churches, their families, their denominations, their friends, their states, other states, and anything, other kinds of states of beings that there might be. This is their own, these are their own ideas. This is their podcast. And someday, I will learn to speak.